My name is Mathilde Duarte, and I'm a first-year PhD student of biomedical sciences at the Cancer Research UK Cambridge Institute.
Well, first of all, Mathilde, congratulations on your research. What are you studying, and why did you want to embark on this field of research?
It's actually a pretty amazing story that started quite early in my childhood. When I was about 10, my grandmother passed away with cancer. And from that age on, I knew that I wanted to become a cancer researcher. And I also knew that I wanted to come to the UK to study because that's what my grandmother did in the 1950s. So I started saving to come here and I decided to pursue the field of biomedical sciences because for me it was the perfect combination of learning about the human body, but then also having that research and scientific side related to lab research. So I studied biomedical sciences at the University of Westminster in London. I then pursued to do a master's in cancer biology at Imperial College London. And now I'm here where I'm studying a very rare form of pediatric brain tumor called choroid plexus carcinoma. And for me, this was a topic that has always interested me because it's very sad how there isn't a lot of research done on pediatric tumors in general, and especially with some pediatric brain tumors like this one, where there's almost no research because they are so rare. Like, for example, here in Cambridge, we only have one case per year or so. So there hasn't been any treatment developments for cancers like those. And because the kids are so young, sometimes they can't even be treated with the standard chemotherapy, radiotherapy, or even surgery. And if they are treated, then they have severe side effects that will affect them for the rest of their lives. So I always knew that that was something and a topic that I really wanted to focus during my PhD. And
so you've gone from someone with cancer who was older to looking at the younger group of cancerous sufferers and a very rare brain cancer. But first of all, if you can take us through what the current thinking is on this cancer, you've mentioned a little bit, and then how your research might change that current thinking. Is that too difficult to do?
Well, I think the main challenge with pediatric brain tumors in general is the fact that usually they developed during embryonic development. So the children are already born with this. So it's completely different when it comes to cancers that affect adults, for example, because those are more due to external factors than their embryonic development. So I think pediatric brain tumors especially are extremely interesting to study because of that. So we can also understand the biology of it and at the same time try to understand, well, even though children are in a phase of their life where they develop much faster than an adult one, still cancer in children are quite rare when you compare to adults, which they are not developing or their cells are not dividing as fast, but they have a much higher rate of cancer. So why is that? Why is that in children who are growing up so fast, their metabolism is so fast, and they almost don't get cancer, but then you have adults that all of them have cancer? So is there an intrinsic mechanism in our cells that is affecting this? And that's actually something that someone in our lab is looking into at the moment. But then with this particular type of cancer, I think with choroid plexus carcinoma is the fact that there hasn't been any new treatment developed in the last 30 years because no one has ever really taken the time to do preclinical testing and testing new drugs to treat this form of cancer.
And I suppose you haven't got a large database to work from.
Exactly, we don't. That's the thing. So, for example, if we want to use human samples, it's quite a challenge because, like I mentioned, we have maybe one case in Cambridge per year, if so. So choroid plexus carcinoma accounts for only 3% of all pediatric brain tumors, so it's extremely rare. And on top of that, it's also the fact that there are not a lot of models that mimic this disease that we can use for preclinical testing.
Now, you're in quite an eminent place, Cambridge. You've been elsewhere too, so I don't want Cambridge to take all the credit. But are you inspired by the people and the labs you work with?
I am extremely impressed and amazed by all the people that I've worked with in the past. I've learned so many things from different people, from my first mentor, Dr. Anatoly Markiv, who was at Westminster, now it's at King's College, who took me in my first week of university when I asked him, can I do a research project? And I was a first-year student, and I wasn't expecting him to say yes, but he did. And I started doing research very early on, and that's thanks to him. Then I go into Dr. Kalpana Surendranath at the University of Westminster, who was my undergraduate supervisor. And for me, she was one of, if not the biggest inspiration when it comes to science in my life. I call her my science mom, because to look at a woman who has a family, is raising a kid, that comes from a different country and still manages to succeed and has this passion for teaching and has this intrinsic passion for science, that every day that I work with her, she inspired me so much to become the best scientist that I could be. And then in my master, I was very fortunate to work in amazing places like the Francis Crick Institute or the Barts Cancer Institute, where I learned a lot when it comes to cancer research, immunology, and I'm thankful to those people. And obviously to my current supervisor, Dr. Richard Gilbertson, who is the most amazing supervisor that a PhD student could ask for.
And I suppose the obstacle in the path of your research is the sheer numbers and finding databases that are large enough that you can draw a conclusion from. But where do you hope to go next with this research? Because a journalist would always want to say, are you looking for a cure, or are you looking for medicines that can abate this condition?
Well, I think we all dream and hope for a cure, and that's also what I want to do, because when I look at the children that are affected by this and the ones that, unfortunately, more than half of the patients die within 5 years, and the ones that survive have side effects for the rest of their lives. So it's, even though the children survive, they will never be the same kid as they were before. So for me, obviously, finding a cure or even finding a new form of therapy that can minimize the side effects of this cancer and the treatment of cancer, it's the ultimate goal. So part of my project is exactly to try and create a large database that we can use to do preclinical testing of novel compounds, of drugs that our collaborators are testing and that have created, and we want to test that in our preclinical hospital, which we then hope to proceed into human trials. So it's very important to do this research so that we know, okay, so is there an alternative to the standard chemotherapy, to the standard radiotherapy? Is there something better?
Well, Mathilde, congratulations on your research. You seem to have, at a young age, inherited a sense of purpose from your grandmother and almost a lifelong quest.
I think that's very much true. If you ask all my family and friends, they always say that I'm the person in their life that since a very young age, I've always had very clear what I wanted to do in the future. And I was fortunate enough that I had the support of everyone around me to pursue this dream that I had. But I think that dreaming sometimes is not the only thing. It's important because you'll have the motivation. But I think it's also very important to work hard, and because things will not fall into your lap unless you work hard for them, unless you take initiative. So the biggest advice that I can give to any student or young girl that wants to become a scientist or even go into another field is work hard and be the person that is not afraid to ask questions and to ask to do things, even if they think the person will say no, because sometimes some people, the right people, will say yes to you and will give you opportunities that will shape you for the rest of your life. And I wouldn't be here without those people.
So knock on the door and it will open.
Exactly. Knock on the door. And, well, it might not open, but if it doesn't, go to another door. And if that one opens, it can open a whole lot of possibilities for you and your future. And I was fortunate enough in my life where I had a lot of people where that's when I knocked on their door, they opened it. And to this day, I still have a very good relationship with them. And I'm so happy that I have them as mentors. And I'm also very happy that they can see me progress from a first-year undergraduate student to now being here in Cambridge, less than 5 years after I came to England. So,
Mathilde, thank you very much indeed. And once again, congratulations. But thank you for talking to the Lucy Cavendish College Science podcast series today. I've enjoyed it very much. It's been a great privilege to talk to you, and no doubt I shall watch you making the headlines in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It was my pleasure, Bonnie. And thank you so much for making sure that people can get heard and their research and the reason why they are here can be heard by you. So thank you very much for this opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.